This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Unallocated number. Trying telephone call. Cleared. Unallocated number.
It's not good listening, this, is it? We'll lose some listeners in the middle of this bit.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. Some massive issues to discuss this week. English clubs in Europe. Why are they struggling? Billy Vunipola, why is he falling apart? Eddie Jones' England squad has been announced on Thursday. Who should he pick? And, of course, this is major for those sitting in the stands. What is appropriate for a pre-match meal? To be precise, is one chunk pasty sufficient? To discuss these and other such great existential issues, we have the good old favourites, Steve Jones and Alex Lowe. Good to see you, boys.
Hiya.
Hello.
Good weekend?
I had an excellent weekend. I went to Swansea, which is actually a place I've not been very often. It was very gloomy down there, but it was a game that was so bizarre, I think I'll be trying to work out what really happened well into my 90s.
So Steve's going to get back to us on that next week. Well, I was in Bath on Friday, which is one of my favourite European performances of all time by Scarlett. Sensational. Alex?
You saw everything. I went to see the Cribs in concert in Brighton, which was brilliant. And then
who won?
The Cribs won handsomely. Brilliant. Brilliant gig as usual. But no, in rugby terms, I actually didn't go to a game because of the way the matches fell this weekend for a Monday paper. They're all on Saturday, so better to take a step back and watch it.
Straight your chin a bit and give us your wisdom, which I think you did.
And then have to report on another injury for Billy Vunipola, sadly. And then and a craven collapse by Leicester in Castro, which is just which was very, very poor for a club of their tradition and history to wave the white flag in Europe.
That was embarrassing, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Was it nice and warm in your lounge, Arthur?
Yeah, it was, yeah. They were having a bit of work done, so okay. It was a bit drafty.
Okay.
I just explain, because there was a bit of an in-joke about pasties and that, but we do have to discuss this. So Exeter Rugby put out this note to the media on Saturday when a bunch of media boys and girls turned up to report on the Exeter-Montpellier game. And this was the notice. Press Food Vouchers was it was entitled. Due to abuse by some members of the media who have been ordering extra items and additional drinks when going to get food prior to match days, it has been decided by senior management at the club that the voucher you are given by the club will now only be permitted to be used for one chunk pasty. Now, this is a terrible day in the history of sports journalism. Personally, I wouldn't have the pasty now anyway. I think they should bring in Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, the local chef. Where do we go from this? Is it a boycott?
Well, I've only ever used it for one chunk pasty. But you like the hog roast, don't you, Slossy?
I do. I did have the hog roast, but I'm sure I won't be seen at Sandy Park again. There's been a bit of a witch hunt as to who is the member of the media who's been ordering extra items.
I think, you know, we're all friends here, but you were in the frame by an anonymous Twitter. I mean, if you've got anything to tell us.
Well, yes, it's an awkward situation, this. I was named and shamed, and I had a very uncomfortable time yesterday trying to wash my hands of that crime. But no, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
The thing is, what is very insulting is, first of all, it's not just a pie we're talking about here, because there were two other options. You could have a bread roll with pulled pork in it. or the vegetarian option, which was a bread roll without. So there were three options. They've now gone down to one. If you don't like pies or a vegetarian, it's pretty poor. But actually, I'll tell you something about the Ospreys at Liberty Stadium. We had a three-course meal. It was absolutely splendid. There was a vegetarian option, which was a hot dog with just onions but no sausage. But the food there was absolutely magnificent. And for the English champions to demean us so badly and to cast such aspersions on the whole global brotherhood of rugby writers and sisterhood, is disgraceful, and it's ill befits the champions to act like that.
Well, I agree. I've actually had sent to me the menu. If you cover a test match at Edgbaston, it goes like this: 9 till 11 a.m. breakfast, so you can have a 2-hour breakfast. Then 12:30 to 2:30 lunch, vouchers needed in brackets. 3:45 treats. We don't get a treat.
Treat.
5 o'clock afternoon tea and 8 o'clock hot snacks. So basically, you're consuming all day long.
But it's not as if we've not done the odd favour for Exeter Chiefs. It was like 10 years of wall to wall blanket coverage, which to them cost not one penny. But there we go. Let's not be churlish.
Well, the word on the street is they might be docked European points for this.
Well, I know that European Rugby Cup are looking into it, and. You know, God bless Exeter. It's a shame we'll never be going there again.
Alex, do you think docking points would be excessive at this stage?
Well, Simon Halliday did just call me before we came on air, and I think it's second only to their investigation into Murad Boujalal's latest bonkers claims about the Mormon clans in EPCR who preach ethics, but behind the scenes go around whipping each other. I think Piegate at Exeter is second only to that in there.
But also, I think Rob Baxter and Tony Rowe are now the Boujalals of English rugby.
Boujalal gives you a ham and cheese sandwich, though, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
And bless him.
Absolutely. And it's a banquet over in Toulon. And there we go. I mean, I'm still absolutely gutted about it, and I will miss going to Sandy Park because it was a great venue and a great lunch.
Right. Well, on that bombshell, we are now going to discuss some other less important issues.
If you're still with us.
Exeter pasties aside, there was some other stuff going on in European rugby this weekend. Do we think that was one of the great weekends? What's your overriding impression? Great weekend or a terrible weekend for English teams in Europe?
Well, it was a poor weekend for English teams, but it was a great weekend of rugby, particularly Saturday. Scarlets on Friday night kicked it off with just a sensational display of attacking rugby. And then there were some superb games on Saturday. I thought Sunday was, apart from the Racing Munster game, it was a bit flat. I mean, Leicester, I've already mentioned, were just embarrassing and let themselves down. I think when they relaunched the European Cup, the English clubs had a view on what it was going to be like. I don't think it's quite delivered every year in the way they wanted in the group stages, but I think this time round there's been some great games, but particularly this weekend.
As usual in this, the shadowy French are holding the strings behind the scenes of organisation, and when that happens, everything's a disaster. But I think that one of the things that's made slightly diminish it is that Saracens and Clermont have been so outstanding this weekend. Like Alex, I thought that the teams at the bottom who can't qualify, it's up to them to maintain the sanctity of the tournament, which Northampton and Harlequins, as ever, did. They had no chance of qualifying. Leicester, for a proud club like that to go with a second team and lose, I thought was shocking. And we were all keen on player welfare. And any competition that was really strict and well-run would have an inquest into it, because now Racing this week will be up against a strong Leicester side, and they'll say, well, hang on, what, you know, we were in, all our opponents should have faced this team as well. It was a bizarre, I don't think it was a great weekend, I think it was a bizarre weekend, and I'll never work out, as I said, what on earth happened to Saracens, because the Ospreys weren't very good, and Saracens should have put them away by half-time. I'll never work out what happened to Wasps, because they're not the sort of side tied to collapse as they did. So all great fun, some great action, some really, really poor games, Saracens and Ospreys for one, but it kept interest boiling.
When the English clubs have done as poorly as they have done, there are inquests, whether we like it or not, because that's just the way the media works. We want to find out why and ask ourselves the questions, and what is the meaning of all this. Do you do we think that there is a grander story behind this? Not grander, but is there a story behind this beyond just a lot of big English teams having a really poor run?
Yeah, of course there is, because the story lies in the weakness of the Pro 14, because now Leinster and Munster have been doing this for a long time, that their players as a team never appear between European Cup games because they know that they'll easily qualify for the next one in the Pro 14. And I think the Ospreys are on their way as well. And one of the things is, because the Pro 14 is relatively weaker compared to the Premiership is flat out, eyeballs out every weekend. And Europe, when it comes along, is just another game.
I think there's another element to that as well, which is the salary cap in the Premiership, and the recent spike in player salaries at the top end has meant that I think there are smaller squads. The depth isn't there in some of these Premiership teams, so when they lose players, they're not bringing in the same quality of backup as they have been in the past, because they can't make the jigsaw fit under the 7 million salary cap when they're paying the top players more.
This is just the ludicrous thing about the salary cap, isn't it? So they put the salary cap up to try and allow them to compete with the French clubs primarily. But as you say, they just end up paying the players so much more that actually squad numbers have gone down. So
yeah, exactly.
They're hurting themselves. So English clubs are struggling in Europe at the moment. The absolute kings of the competition right now are Ireland. Leinster are the only team that has so far qualified. Munster look in a very strong shape. Ulster probably will go through as well. And to talk to us about this, we have, I don't know, gloating from Dublin? Anyway, from our Dublin studio, we have one of the podcast favourites, Peter O'Reilly. How are you, Pete?
I'm well, thanks, Owen. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hello, Peter.
Hello.
How pleased, generally, is Irish rugby with the state of play in Europe at the moment? You do well at this stage in Europe, then you go into the Six Nations with your tails up.
Yeah, there is a bit of an upswing effect, I suppose. You know, rugby fans in Ireland have always been enchanted by what was the Heineken Cup, what's now the Champions Cup, and the first year of the Champions Cup, when none of the provinces or all of the provinces failed to make it through to the knockout stages, it was talk of Armageddon over here, but things have swung back the other way. I suppose it's always been seen as the most important competition for the provinces, and that means there's a problem with the quality and the commercial capabilities of the Pro 14. That's something they're still looking at, but it means that there's very much a priority list where you have international rugby at the top, and then next comes Europe, and these games are seen almost as mini test matches. And yes, there's an element of bringing us into the Six Nations on an upswing, and but also I think there's great excitement because there are so many new players coming through and putting their hands up for selection for Ireland as well. So there's a depth across the board which we haven't had before. And that makes everybody excited.
Do you think the whinging from the little Englanders in our London studio about the fact that it's unfair, that because the Premiership is all guns blazing week in week out, and the preparation for us?
No one said it's unfair. You just said what it is. No one said it's unfair.
Okay, unfair is the wrong word, but the parity is what we're missing here.
Well, isn't there talk of scrapping relegation in the Premiership? Because obviously the Premiership teams are under severe pressure to keep hitting certain standards week in, week out, whereas the provinces definitely are able to prioritise these games, and that isn't parity. That is, a type of inequality, if you like. But that we don't see that as our problem, though. We see that as I suppose the attitude over here, which would be fairly small-minded and short-sighted, is, well, listen, the Premiership wanted to rearrange Europe a couple of years ago. They got what they want in terms of meritocracy and the divvy out of the funds and all that sort of thing. So, you know, don't start complaining now. But I suppose we can understand the situation from a club owner's point of view in England, that they tend to think about the Champions Cup games when the Champions Cup games come up, whereas the Leo Cullens and the Johan van Grans and these guys are thinking about Europe from a couple of weeks out. You know, they're doing their prep even while they're playing in the Guinness Pro 14.
Pete, you are completely right that English club owners did try to redesign Europe to make it better for them, and it hasn't worked. And there is some amusement to be had at that.
I was completely wrong. I think that it's just sport. We've just said there's an advantage to the Irish teams. Well, actually, when Peter's Armageddon took place, everyone said, oh, there's an advantage to the English teams. It's just a wheel of fortune. It all comes round. And actually, you know, the only danger to the three Irish teams this year, to me, seems is if they knock, you know, they're drawn to knock each other out in the semi-final or something like that, because I think they're way above it. Their passion for it is amazing. And also, you take Munster, on paper, not a great side. They have their passion for it and their almost animal instincts for it have extended beyond the end of the O'Gara, O'Connell, David Wallace, Anthony Foley era, and they're just still batting above their weight. So look, it just happens.
If you look at Leinster and Munster in particular, though, I mean, can you give us a frame of comparison? Do you think these are particularly good teams at the moment comparatively to previous years? Or I mean, it seems to me that the Leinster team right now is really really purring.
Leinster, I think they felt that they missed an opportunity last year getting to a semi-final in Lyon against Clermont and not winning it. They also have new attacking threats which they didn't necessarily have this time last year through Larmour, but especially through James Lowe, and they have competition for places, which is, you know, it means that everybody is actually looking over their shoulder. So they have what we used to have, or our Irish teams used to have, which was, if you like, a squad of 30 players, all of whom can contribute. So I would say Leinster are justifiable favourites to win it, and they're playing at a time when some of their biggest opponents or rivals have dipped. I'd say they're still worried about the possibility of having to play Saracens in April, when Saracens may have qualified and may have got their mojo back. That's their biggest worry, I would say, at this stage.
I agree with everything that Peter said there, especially the thing about being hard-nosed. I mean, on Saturday...
Well done, Pete, because he's not been agreeing with me today.
The Ospreys the Ospreys had a penalty to draw the match. We don't know whether that draw will be any good to them. But they could have kicked to the corner where their forwards had got on top and gone for the try, which would have given them the pool and a home tie. And sometimes you've got to be more far-sighted than just said, oh, great, lads, we drew the game. And I also agree that it's the new wave of French clubs at the top who haven't got that hard-nosed edge about them. You know, Munster. You look at Munster, and all they haven't lost many games. All the ones they have lost, they always sneak in with a bonus point or something like that, or maybe even score four tries and lose. So there is a lot more to Europe than just going out there and bashing your head against someone else.
Pete, last thing, this has sort of becoming the weekly Jordan Larmour conversation on this podcast, at least. So just give us your view on Jordan, and would you have him playing Six Nations rugby next month?
Yes, I would have him involved. Same time, I wouldn't necessarily be that surprised if he doesn't start in Montpellier this weekend, if Rob Kearney starts for an away game like that, where he would be introduced here and there by Leinster and by Joe Schmidt. I can see him being a bench option maybe for the second Six Nations game against Italy. Ireland are so structured that it's almost like a new player coming in has to be formatted like a disc. He has to be get the Joe Schmidt treatment. And Larmour hasn't been involved in the last couple of camps or tours. But by the same token, you can't not use an attacking weapon like that. I think he is something a bit different from talking to some of the senior Leinster players as well. He is rugby smart. He is he's tough. He's got a bit of a dog about him. Apart from all of the obvious athletic attributes that he has, so yeah, this huge excitement. I think it's fair to say that not since O'Driscoll came through has there been so much chat about somebody. And I think normally people would worry about that. People in charge of players would worry about that. But from what I hear, Leinster and Ireland are happy that Larmour is the sort of kid who can handle that sort of chat.
Pete, just we started the conversation, and you were saying there's a it gives Ireland a build-up into the Six Irish teams a build-up and into Six Nations. We see in Wales the great hysteria. Reece Webb won't be available for them once he moves to Toulon. Ireland have been very successful in keeping Omani, Tadhg Furlong on new deals recently. Zebo is obviously off. When you see the way Donoghue Ryan played at the weekend, knowing that he is unavailable for Ireland, is there the same kind of regret or clamour for to be able to pick players from outside Ireland, or when you have someone like James Ryan coming through, it kind of offsets that?
It's a position by position situation, Alex. I think they weren't very clever in allowing Donoghue Ryan to go. I think they didn't believe that he would go to France, and he called their bluff because second row was one area where Joe Schmidt can't really handle a couple of injuries. I never saw Peter O'Mahony leaving. I think O'Mahony and CJ Stander benefited from the timing of Zebo's departure. Probably helped them to get a few extra bob in their next contract. But Peter O'Mahony wouldn't, as I think I said on the show before, he wouldn't last very long in France playing week to week. He has to be minded just the way he plays the game. They try to make sure that they manage the number of departures, and they do that pretty well. And part of the reason is that Joe Schmidt is at the helm, and there's a sense of excitement. Something could be achieved. Something a bit different could be achieved at the next World Cup. How they maintain that down the line is going to be very difficult, because if Irish rugby keeps on producing talent like it is at the moment, there just won't be enough spaces for everybody. I think maybe in a few years' time, there may be a few more people going abroad, but for the time being, it's a kind of a delicate ecosystem that they're holding together, and Ireland, the national team, should benefit accordingly.
Connacht are all going like a bomb in the secondary competition. Would there be any way that they consider just creating another proper level by funding them, upping Connacht's funding, and saying, right, now we are four?
That's a good point. Yeah, when you think that not that long that they were thinking of cutting Connacht adrift because the numbers didn't add up. Connacht need to sort out their stadium. It doesn't look like a team that plays in the Champions Cup or a team that won the Pro 12 a couple of years ago. So they are always looking for more funding. And rather than bringing in Irish qualified players or project players from abroad, what they need to do is start getting the surplus Leinster players to play in the provinces where they are needed, in the positions in the provinces where they are needed. I think that's the way the IRFU would like to do it, rather than to try and set up a new franchise through the Exiles teams or anything like that. I think and Connacht is a natural solution to that problem, as you say.
Excellent. Well, listen, from our Dublin studios, Pete, thanks very much.
Take care, Pete.
Cheers, guys.
You're listening to The Ruck. We're back after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Ruck. Do we think England's going to get more than one club through? It could get if Exeter don't beat Glasgow away, which they probably should do because Glasgow are out of it. If Exeter don't win that, then we
there's a good chance that England will get zero clubs through. So probably we'll win that and we'll be the one to go through with Leinster from Pool 3. And then you're sort of scratching heads about how the maths works for Saracens possibly and Bath possibly as well.
So I think you're looking at those three, Exeter, Bath and Saracens. Exeter are the best placed English club to go through, and then you'd imagine Bath would win at Benetton, and it just requires the result to go right for them. And Saracens, it's interesting what Pete was just saying about the Irish teams in Europe and how they can prioritise. Saracens, to a degree, do that. They call their European week selection matches, and everything else is based on rotation, pretty much. I mean, they had horrible injuries at the weekend, and they just haven't clicked this season, and they don't seem to have the aura of previous seasons about them, and it's an oddity, really. But yeah, but I suppose when you lose Billy Vunipola, Michael Rose and Jackson Ray all before half time in a game, it's not going to help.
I think going that, you know, you've got Wasps, Saracens and Bath who have a kind of a fighting chance, though probably not even a 50-50 chance. Then Exeter should, if they win, at least Exeter can say, look, if we go out boldly and win this well, we should be okay. But then you look at it again and say, well, Saracens have got to come back from a real blow. Wasps have just got absolutely no resources left who are fit. And Bath, who knows how they're going to pull up after getting thrashed. So, you know, it's entirely possible there'll be none. I think probably the English qualifiers will either be one or possibly two.
Tie of the final round has to be Scarlets against Toulon, though. I mean, that is an absolute belter, isn't it? That's kind of, well, it's winner take all for Scarlets probably, and I've already said how much I enjoy seeing the Scarlets on Friday night. On that subject, favourite European, top European performances that you've seen in recent years?
The second half of Leinster's Heineken Cup final against Northampton, when they were dead and buried, and Jonathan Sexton that day
in 2011.
Jonathan Sexton that day kind of showed the player he was going to become. He, with O'Driscoll, but he grabbed the team at half time and delivered him talking afterwards about the Liverpool comeback in Istanbul, and he used that as an example of what Leinster could go out and achieve, and that second half was remarkable. The other one that comes to mind is Wasps' performance against Munster in that incredible semi-final over at the old Lansdowne Road over a decade ago now, but those were the two that immediately come to mind.
The Wasps run was sensational. People forget they had to win away at Perpignan when Perpignan were absolutely savagely good. But the best performance I've ever seen, one-off performance, is unquestionably last year's final, because Saracens were up against a great team in Clermont. They were a great team then. Saracens won easily and disdainfully by beating them up front, but also playing great rugby behind the scrum as well. That was the day when anyone who says that Test rugby is always better than club rugby had to shut up for good.
Before we even get to next weekend's Europe, we have a major announcement during the week. On Thursday, Eddie Jones announces his squad, his England squad for the Six Nations. Pretty interesting times at the moment because of the very, very disappointing news that Billy Vunipola has broken a bone in his forearm. So we don't know how long he's going to be out for, but we can presume that he'll miss the first round or two, I would say, at minimum. England don't have Nathan Hughes there as a backup either, so the back row is the area of interest or the area of problem for Eddie Jones. What should he be doing?
He's short of ball carriers. That's his big issue now. Short of Ballard, short of anyone who can thrust them over the gain line. He ended the autumn by playing Rob Shaw at open side. I think to England play Italy first up, and my back row for that game would have Zach Mercer at number 8, because he's been an apprentice in that squad for a year or so. He's athletic, powerful. No, none of the options are anywhere near as big or physical as Billy Vunipola or Nathan Hughes. Sam Simmons gives up 5 stone. I think Zach Mercer gives up 4, but he's just a different type of player. And for the Italy game, I'd be tempted to have Chris Robshaw at 6. And Zach Mercer at 8, and then depending on how he comes through, Sam Underhill at 7, although he looked a bit rusty having come back from 8 weeks out. As you get deeper into the tournament, there's a very strong argument to have Courtney Laws back at 6, and then it depends on how Sam Simmons is going, because Eddie Jones was very taken by him in the autumn. He's made a lot of strides very quickly, but he's not sure whether he's really a number eight, which is the big area that in England are lacking. Because if you have Simmons at eight, you just don't have anyone who can drive him over the gain line other than Mako, really. And then Marrow and probably Laws in the second row. You're short of ballast. So I think I'd be tempted to give Zach Mercer a go because he's been around the squad for quite a while now. He's doing good things and certainly gets Italy, it'd be a good chance.
I don't disagree with Zach Mercer. I think he was the only one who held his head high, Alex, on Friday. But I think that they've got to get Launchbury back for Launchbury's competitiveness in the breakdown. I think that a second row of Atosha, who is a good breakdown forward, and Courtney Laws is too willowy. I would start definitely Courtney Laws at number six, because you've still got the line-out option, and then you've got a bit more of a powerful scrummage to save Courtney's shoulder. If they don't go Courtney there, I would absolutely, without any shadow of doubt, play Don Armand there, who's the outstanding player for me in English rugby in the season so far. Sam Simmons, I think, must come into consideration. I think probably Underhill's really got it all to do. I certainly have Haskell in the mix, providing he's not suspended, and Sam Simmons, because he's got a bit of electricity there. But it is incredibly difficult area. Who do you have, Sotty?
I was really enjoying the emergence of Sam Underhill, I mean, 3 months ago, but that got stopped in his tracks with the concussion and the 8 weeks out, and he didn't look on Friday. He looked like someone who hadn't played for 8 weeks. Not surprising. So I think England, Eddie's been trying to play with that seven position for a long time now. Haskell, I'd be amazed if he's around for the first two games, and he hasn't. Well, he hasn't been the Haskell of 2 years ago for quite a long time. So I think that is a problem. I think you have to have a Laws or an Atosha at six, because we're lacking the ballast that Alex mentions. I agree with you on Don Armand. I think Don Armand's ahead of Chris Robshaw and needs to have a go. I think you've got to try him now, because we're sort of getting to the stage where if you're going to bring players through for World Cups, then campaigns, we're running out of campaigns. So have I answered any questions there? I've just talked about everyone.
I think now's the time, particularly for the Italy game, where they've got a 2 week build up to it. Now's the time to play Zach Mercer. I think as you get into the teeth of the tournament, England need to go with three locks in the team, because I completely agree with Jonesy. Launchbury has to play, Atosha has to play, and Laws has to play. And I'd have Laws as you get into it, Laws at six, and then you can balance out the best option at seven, knowing that if Zach Mercer goes well against Italy, you can keep him there, or you can reshuffle. But you've got to have, I think now's the time to try these guys, and you know, Marcus Smith is another. I don't imagine he'll start. In fact, I don't imagine he'll play at all. But he's there, and he's there for a reason. And the reason is the World Cup. And at some point, these guys are going to.
I'm just not quite sure. Convinced by Mercer. I think he's a phenomenally talented player. I think in 5 years' time, he might be brilliant. But at the moment, he doesn't have the weight or the carry of a Billy or a Nathan Hughes. He's extremely athletic. But on Friday, yes, he was the one fighting at the end. But he was also the one who gave up too many ludicrous offloads and that, which helped the Scarlets keep the momentum and keep the foot on the throat. So I don't think he's ready. I think Eddie's got quite a job to do there, and it actually helps him that he starts with Italy. You know, he's sort of going through the gears in the Six Nations. You start with Italy, move on to Wales, and then he's got Scotland, and then the France and Ireland at the end. It sort of helps him in that respect.
Yeah. I've been thinking all season, well, actually, Ireland are second favourites to win the championship. I think now they can win at Twickenham. I think if you're gauging it now, and if they played this week, they'd win at Twickenham. And also, I think that Eddie doesn't seem to like people who are written up in the media. But I think some of us should continue to hold up alternative selections just to see how they fare. And I mean things like Mercer, if he's not in, Ollie Woodburn, astonishing finisher, Alex Good is playing as well as ever, the only Saracen, Don Armand, Robson at Watson. I'll give you one more who's no longer spoken about, Christian Wade, who was discarded from all consideration because he was too small and not physical enough, has become one of the best defenders and one of the best men in contact. He seems to have transformed his body shape as Shane Williams did, and I think it's a time that he got a shot as well. So they may be media favourites, but they'll continue to be so, and we'll hold them up and compare them with Eddie's selection.
And finally, we just want to discuss the new arrival at Wasps. The all-black player Lima Sopoango, Wasps announced on their website today that they had made this great signing, when in fact the news had been broken by who, Alex?
You, Slotty.
Thank you. And how long ago was that?
You, Slotty. Well done.
5 days ago.
A week ago. Yeah. Well, you know, these things happen. Yeah. It's a real statement signing, though, for two reasons. It's massive for Wasps, and it probably says goodbye to Cipriani. And the other thing is, it just further undermines All Black rugby and their ability to hold on to players.
I'm pleased about that, and also I'm looking forward to seeing Sopoango play. I think, until whether he's a success or a failure, for the first four or five home Wasps games, everyone's going to go and watch him.
You could tell from the scripted comments from Steve Hansen when New Zealand confirmed he was leaving how disappointed they were, because in the last... Well, since the World Cup, they've lost... They've got Bowden Barrett as their number one. They've lost Aaron Cruden, Liam Sopoanga and Colin Slade. Each of them at the time was the backup. And it's that second tier of All Blacks, which Steve Hansen has spoken about before, where he's every time he develops one, they get picked off by an English club and he has to develop another one. Now, they're not short of players, but it certainly harms their development. You can see how disappointed they were to lose him.
You could pick an All Blacks team in Europe that would contest a World Cup final, I would say.
Hmm. And also a Fijian team that would probably do the same.
Oh, no, I'd love to watch that.
I don't think mass migration of players is good, whether it's to New Zealand or away. But look, Sopoanga, that's someone you go and watch.
OK, that's all for now. Gents, thanks very much. Steve, thanks very much. Alex, we go into the final weekend of Europe. It has been an outstanding weekend of competition in Europe, and the final weekend of the knockout rounds is set to be outstanding. So go watch, turn on in your living rooms. This is a very good time for European rugby. We'll be back to discuss it next week. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.